Good Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Johnny was a schoolboy when he heard his first Beatles song. Love me do, I think it was, and from there it didn't take him long.
The FBI is the lead investigative agency, and we're investigating this as an attack of terrorism, along with our partners. Today at approximately 3:15 a.m. Central Standard Time, an individual drove a pickup truck into a crowd on Bourbon Street in New Orleans, killing at least 10 individuals and injuring dozens more. After hitting the crowd, he exited the vehicle and fired upon local law enforcement. Law enforcement returned fire and the subject was pronounced deceased at the scene. Two law enforcement officers were injured and transported to local hospitals.
This is Lethia Duncan. She's the FBI agent overseeing the attack in New Orleans and the investigation. And, you know, after the real debacle of the mayor calling it terrorism and she calling it not terrorism in the first press conference at 7 a.m. yesterday, the 1 p.m. press conference, at least her portion of it, I thought she did quite well. She really should have been running this press conference, and instead the governor winds up kind of running the press conference and, I mean, just doing a horrible, horrible job of it. Like, every time he talked, I became less reassured. But what she gave was actually quite good information at the time. Some of it has changed. A little bit of it has changed since then, but we'll carry you through some of this.
The subject has been identified as 42-year-old Samsud Dim Jabbar, a U.S.-born citizen from Texas.
And, of course, when you hear that, you immediately think, oh, with a name like that. Well, just remember, many people have that name and don't engage in terrorism. And some people do not have a Middle Eastern Islamic-type name and still do engage in terrorism. So that's not dispositive, but she pretty quickly did away with any question about what was going on here.
An ISIS flag was located on the trailer hitch of the vehicle, and the FBI is working to determine the subject's potential associations and affiliations with terrorist organizations.
And so the issue there is not whether it was terrorism or inspired by terrorism or Islamic radicalism. It was whether ISIS sourced, organized, trained, recruited, or whether he self-recruited and just identified with. But a guy driving a white pickup truck with a giant ISIS flag off the back through a crowded street in New Orleans during a New Year's Eve celebration around the police cars that were set up in place of the dysfunctional bollards and wedges, there's IEDs, there's some kind of a rifle. I've read different reports, AR-15 style or AK-47 style, that he had in there, as well as other devices around the French Quarter. It's not a mystery whether this was a terrorist attack at all. That was decisively answered yesterday in the 1 o'clock press conference. And, you know, they talked about that and what had been done at the time. And
weapons and potential improvised explosive devices, IEDs, were located in the subject's vehicle. Other potential IEDs were also located in the French Quarter. As of now, two IEDs have been found and rendered safe. The FBI Special Agent Bomb Technicians, as well as our local law enforcement partners, have been working to determine if any of these devices are viable, and they'll work to render those devices safe.
Which is appropriate, but there were at least two that were rendered non-viable, or, you know, that found two what seemed like some kind of pipe bomb and out in the French Quarter. And I've read elsewhere that they were in, like, coolers or that kind of thing to conceal them. I don't know whether they were pressurized the way like the Boston Marathon bombing. I don't have any information about that, but still, you know, this is all pretty concerning because that means it all could have been much worse, right? And I don't love getting into the details here, but remember I asked a question top of the hour, right before the top of the hour, I was talking to David about, you know, first attack, second attack kind of stuff. You know, one of the strategies that has been used is you create an incident at A so that people run away towards B where there's worse things waiting. Was that the case? I don't have any idea. But given that they found other explosives elsewhere, this is what you start to wonder. You know, what was the real intent of this? Because I don't mean to say it quite this way, but you'll understand. One guy driving a truck through a semi-crowded street is and kills 10 people is and wounds 30 or 40 is horrible. But how much worse could it have been if? Right? I mean, which is, I think, what we've all been thinking. At least, I mean, I don't know. I've been thinking that since this happened.
The FBI, we are working with our partners to investigate this as an act of terrorism. We're aggressively running down all of the leads to identify the possible subject's associates. We're working to ensure that there is no further threat.
Which, of course, since we, as far as we know, don't have anybody else in detention, it would have to, you'd have to say, yes, still an active threat.
We do not believe that Jabbar was solely responsible. We are aggressively running down every lead, including those of his known associates. That's why we need the public's help.
And they're asking for anybody who's got information. You know, what we've learned since is Samsud Dinjabar. And I don't typically talk names of perpetrators going all the way back to the Boston Marathon bombing, although I do occasionally mention his name or even hear it at NAS Pensacola. But, you know, sometimes you can make too much of a thing about avoiding a name, and that's who it is. He was a staff sergeant in the Army. He was an IT chief for the 82nd Airborne Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team. According to one of the reports I got, you know, in the actively deployed to Afghanistan and then in the reserves for some time thereafter. It's hard to process all of that, but it just, unfortunately, that is the situation. We'll come back to this in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
No accidents to let you know about right now, but if you're traveling on Highway 29 northbound from Oakfield up all the way to I-10, you're going to see minor delays, especially around the Burgess Road light. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Somebody says on the text line 437-1620, at least it took place at 3 a.m. instead of right at midnight. Crowded, but not as bad as midnight. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the police presence was. I don't know how many cars were there. Of course, these are all questions worth asking, right? Did they have consideration to do it at midnight and wait because there were too many cop cars blocking the way and he couldn't get onto the sidewalk around them or something like that? Again, I don't know. Did it take that long to plant the devices? I don't know. I don't know what the whole plan was. But I will tell you, you know, I was actually comforted. Very little in the press conference yesterday comforted me. And the more the police chief Kirkpatrick talked, the more the mayor talked, and especially the more Landry, the governor, talked, the less reassured I became, especially when you find out all of the incompetence surrounding the dysfunctional bollards that haven't worked for a decade. That's the street posts, okay? The dysfunctional wedges that don't work, and they keep them down because they're concerned that if they get up, they'll get stuck up. What was being done to protect these people? A very knowable threat, a very predictable threat, and how they seem to all be baffled that somebody could drive up on the sidewalk around the cop cars that were placed across the intersections. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. We talked about that last hour quite extensively. But I like, actually, John Kennedy, you know, the senator, I actually like a lot of what he said. He was the only one in the press conference to me that was reassuring.
I wish I understood better why bad things happen to good people. If I make it to heaven, I'm going to ask. For those people who don't believe in objective evil, all you have to do is look at what happened in our city early this morning.
Correct. Absolutely.
Here's what I want to ask from the federal government. Catch these people. And then tell the American people the truth.
So you say, why would that be a question? Because you remember the last time we had a noteworthy incident like this where somebody was killed was with the presidential candidate and former President Trump. And the first thing the Secret Service did was to blame local law enforcement and to tell you a whole bunch of falsehoods. There is some appropriate and very appropriate skepticism about the ability of government agencies, including at the federal level, to tell us the truth about these things. And he's raising this concern.
Now, I don't want you to tell us yet anything that's going to interfere with your investigation. And there are things that I've been told that I think are true that I'm not sharing with you today because it could interfere with their investigation. But after we get to the bottom of this, they need to tell the American people the truth.
Absolutely. And good. Hold that information. I've said this a couple of times, but they may have other people in custody and not tell us. And fine. If they're interrogating them to get information about other accomplices, funding sources, or other plans, tell me nothing. but tell me everything eventually.
I think the mayor and the governor are very wise to postpone this ball game for 24 hours. There's just too much stuff we don't know, and it's just not worth it.
Yeah, I actually agree. That was probably the right decision to put the game off for now. Also, because it's hard for people to go that day, and you know, really. But I think today will be a lot better.
I will promise you this. I will, when it is appropriate and this investigation is complete, you will find out what happened and who was responsible, or I will raise fresh hell, and I will chase those in the federal government who are responsible for telling us what happened, like they stole Christmas.
Good, good. I need somebody to be angry. I'm glad somebody's angry, and you know, because I didn't get enough of that from the other people, the right way, the right direction. What else do we know at this time? Somebody says the reason they put his name out is so that people and so that other people who might have information would be able to convey it. Totally agreed. Totally agreed. By the way, a story that I had not seen, but is let's see, this is The Guardian is reporting. Guardian actually does a lot of really good reporting on U.S. stuff. Louisiana Attorney General Liz Murrell told NBC News she can say with some certainty there are multiple people who were involved. Murrell also told the press a collection of improvised explosive devices discovered shortly after the attack appeared to have been made in a New Orleans home. A house fire occurred on Wednesday morning, quote, that was connected to this event where we believe the IEDs were being made, Murrell said. I hadn't heard that anywhere. Did you see that, John? I hadn't.
No,
either.
I had no clue about that.
The premises, a short-term Airbnb rental, likely leased by those involved, reporting PA News agency. Authorities confirming that it's suspected New Orleans attacker may not be solely responsible. So that there was a house fire that morning that might have been connected to the IED manufacturer. Also, somebody asks, how could this guy afford that very expensive truck? It was rented. Mm-hmm. We know it was rented. And by the way, he had had financial problems and gone through a divorce recently. And so, you know, you start to ask the question, well, how did he come up with the money for all this? Well, maybe he didn't come up with the money himself, right? That's where funding, that's where radicalization, that's where ISIS coordination, control, training, funding, all that stuff kind of, you know, comes into question. And we don't know these answers just yet. At least we haven't been told yet. Okay. By the way, the other thing that I think I have not done and I do want to do is, as much as we might talk about the incident and what I consider to be pretty significant failures by the police over the years to make sure that people are safe from something like this, and also the pretty terrible failure to run the press conference effectively yesterday. I mean, it was really bad. But I do want to talk a little bit about the victims, because sometimes that, and I mean always, that tends to get muted in the conversation. We don't talk about them enough, and we don't know all at this point, okay? But those who have been putting out information so far on social media, CBS had this out. Kareem Badawi was a student at the University of Alabama. His father had put out a post on Facebook. He had started his freshman year in autumn of 2023 from Baton Rouge. Tiger Beck, former All-Ivy Princeton football player, age 28, died during the attack. An amazing kid, according to his family. Worked as junior bonds trader in cybersecurity at Seaport Global. Loved to fish and hunt. Graduate of St. Thomas More Catholic High School in they say Lafayette or Lafayette. How do they say it in Louisiana?
Lafayette.
Lafayette. Okay. I know some people say that word differently. I want to make sure and get it right if I can. Nikaira Cheyenne Dido, an aspiring nurse. Her mother, Melissa, had put in a social media post and confirmed that she lost her baby. She had begun the nursing program at Blue Cliff College January 13th last year, and her mother, who's also a nurse. Hubert Gothrow. Or Goatrow, pardon me, I don't know how to say it. 21, graduated from Archbishop Shaw High School, New Orleans in 2021, according to a Facebook post, just asking everybody to pray for them, for their family, and posted a picture of him, and he just looks like, you know, it's like a kid in his tux, you know, going to his prom. Reggie Hunter, age 37, a store manager and a dad, living in Baton Rouge, killed one of his cousins, confirmed to CBS News. Hunter had two sons, Landon and Christian, 11 and 19 months old. Nicole Perez, age 27, a mother of a four-year-old killed in the attack. Worked at Kimmy's Deli in Metairie, is that how you say it? Metairie. A dedicated worker, smart, happy, a good-hearted person. Matthew Tenadorio, 25, died in the attack. remembered by his family as a beloved son, brother, uncle, and friend with a laid-back spirit. And those are all the names I have so far. But real people with real families and real lives and real futures cut short by somebody inspired by radical Islamofascist terrorism to attack people who are just out having a good time early on New Year's Day. 7:24 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay, and for me as a reporter, it's always such a difficult thing to balance wanting to know the facts, wanting to see if there's blame to be had and on which side it falls, wanting to pray and just have my heart broken about this thing that happened that makes us all scared about what could happen anywhere else, like here or anywhere, when there's a gathering of people and the kind of thing that you hear about, and all of a sudden, you know, it's New Orleans away and you think, oh my God, you know, it could be anywhere. So it's just, you know, and a lot of people, this affects them differently. You know, we had talking to Meg yesterday, you know, from Pep Talk, and you know, I mean, she was really unsettled by this, and for all kinds of reasons, including that her good friends were in town to watch the game, and she was going to go but hadn't been able to go. So just, this is kind of one of those times where just kind of pay attention to people and, you know, be helpful, you know? Be aware, be helpful, be kind. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
No accidents to let you know about right now. I'm seeing I-10, I-110, even Highway 29 is looking good this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
Some people believe that Jesus came into the world primarily for social reasons. They believe he came to feed the poor or heal the sick. The truth is, the primary reason Jesus came into the world was not social at all, but it was spiritual. Luke 19:10 explains that Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost. Mark 10:45 says that he came to give his life a ransom for many. Spiritually speaking, we all have a serious sin problem, and God gave his only begotten Son to die in your place and in mine to make atonement for our sin. Jesus came as a medicinal healing balm for a sin-sick people. I urge you to admit that you're a sinner and call upon Christ to save you.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
The cooler weather in Pensacola is a great time of the year for gardening. Whether it's planting roses, planting shrubs and trees in cool weather color, and of course, planning for spring. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesdays, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Barnes Feed Store.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. The official kickoff of the 2025 Pensacola Mardi Gras season happens Saturday at 5 o'clock inside Seville Quarter. See the official Blessing of the Float lining up and down Zaragoza and Government. See PensacolaMardiGras.com. The Pensacola Dog Fanciers Association presents the Farm Dog Event at the Equestrian Center Saturday from 7 to 7. Bring your friendly dog for activities, food trucks, and a shot clinic. Submit your event at NewsRadio923.com.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
When your twin powers activate, shape out an eagle.
Form of water.
Meanwhile, there was football yesterday.
What?
Did you watch the games?
I watched a couple of them, yes.
Okay, so we're just not going to talk about the Ohio State-Oregon game.
That was awful. That was
horrible. Oh, my God. As an Oregon fan, oh, my God, this was the worst. They just got slaughtered in the first half. They lost the whole game in the first half.
They did.
It was terrible. And they beat Oregon, or they beat Ohio State in October.
I know.
I don't know.
But
what
I guess
happened.
They learned a lot of lessons.
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And then the ASU Texas game,
oh,
which was like the first 20 minutes of the first half, and then if you went away for 2.5 hours because it was totally boring, and then the last, like, hour, really, when it was in double overtime, that was thrilling. Oh, my God. And for Texas to pull it out off an interception in the second overtime, I mean, that was a thrilling game.
Mm-hmm.
It was boring for a long time, but in the end, it was very thrilling. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, with everything happening in New Orleans and Las Vegas, we haven't even had time to mention this. There were 10 people are recovering after a shooting last night in New York City. Those shots rang out at about 11:20 last night outside of a nightclub and an event venue. This was in Queens. 10 people have been 10 people have been shot. 9 of them were taken to nearby hospitals.
All right.
President-elect Trump reportedly holding a victory rally the day before his inauguration. The Inauguration Committee made that announcement yesterday. They say that'll happen at the Capital One Arena, and it'll be his first speech in Washington, D.C.
All right, since
his last administration.
David, thank you so much for the update. Oh, I didn't play the clips this hour, but I do want to give credit. I thought Joe Biden did a great job last night talking about this for about 4 minutes and doing consoler-in-chief stuff, which is, I thought, that's really his gear. That's his best capability is to do that. Coming up next, we're going to have Chief of Police, Pensacola Police, Eric Randall, is going to join us. Obviously, we'll be talking about event safety, crowd safety, and the attack in New Orleans.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The FBI says they expect to turn the crime scene on Berman Street in New Orleans over to local law enforcement. Fox's Madison Scarpino has more on the alleged terrorist, Shamsun Dean Jabbar.
Investigators are trying to figure out how Jabbar, a Texas-born U.S. citizen, became radicalized. He served 13 years in the Army and Army Reserves. The FBI says there was an ISIS flag and pipe bombs in the truck he was driving. Police say Jabbar was able to get past a cop car that was essentially working as a barrier because the normal barriers there were not in effect.
Police killed Jabbar in a shootout. 15 people died in the truck attack. Police trying to determine if there's a link to New Orleans and the Cybertruck explosion outside the Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas. The driver was killed. At least 7 others are injured. In college football, Sugar Bowl in New Orleans postponed from last night due to the attacks will kick off at 4 p.m. Eastern this afternoon. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now, it is sunny and a little bit chilly. We've got 42 degrees in Pensacola. The National Weather Service has confirmed an EF1 tornado did hit north of Flomaton over the weekend. That twister caused some damage in the Barnett Crossroads area. The Weather Service says the tornado was on the ground for just over 2 miles and had winds up to about 100 miles an hour. There were no injuries reported in our area. Police in Bay Minette investigating a fatal shooting on Wednesday. Officers were called to Pecan Street, the 1200 block, where a man with a gunshot wound was found laying in the street. That man was pronounced dead at the scene. Right now, there's no word on any suspects, and the investigation continues. The Escambia County man wanted for shooting his roommate on Christmas Day has been arrested. 45-year-old Terrence Franklin. He's charged with aggravated assault and possession of a weapon by a convicted felon. Investigators say Franklin shot his roommate twice with a shotgun after some type of argument. The victim had serious injuries but is expected to recover. Franklin was booked into the Escambia jail yesterday. He's being held with no bond. Well, there were people from our area celebrating the new year in New Orleans this week. One family from Milton was there. Luckily, they avoided most of the terror attack in their hotel room.
Don't really have words. We are shocked.
That is Shara Willett, who talked with Channel 3. They were staying in the French Quarter at the Caesars Palace Hotel. She said family and friends started calling just moments after that attack happened, and she said they were most likely planning to head back home soon due to the uncertainty of the situation in New Orleans. The Pensacola Beach Polar Plunge happened yesterday afternoon. There were hundreds of people at the Paradise Bar and Grill on Pensacola Beach. Many of the attendees, dressed in costume, migrated to the island to participate in the tradition. Other polar plunge locations in the area included 2 sites in Navarre and 1 site at Floribama in Perdido Key. A former Secret Service agent seems to believe the incidents in New Orleans and Las Vegas should serve as wake-up calls. Palm Beach County's Tim Miller asked yesterday or talked yesterday, rather, about the apparent terrorist attacks that killed at least a dozen people. He says, for many years, Americans have gone where they wanted to and not worried about whether the police would be there. Now Miller says he challenges everybody to not have that attitude. And he says his advice would be to ask yourself when you go somewhere how you could make a quick exit if you need to. Celebratory gunfire is being blamed for two separate deaths in the state of Florida. In Miami-Dade County, 10-year-old Yanelez Mangua was hit in the head by a stray bullet. In Osceola County, 56-year-old Carmen Akoa was killed at a home in Kissimmee. Police say Akoa and Mangua were each hit by stray bullets that were fired by somebody celebrating the New Year. So far, there have been no arrests announced in either of those cases. It is 735 at News Radio, 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. No accidents to let you know about right now. Everything is flowing smoothly on I-10, I-110. Still seeing some minor delays on Highway 29 northbound as you approach Burgess Road. But other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Beautiful sunny skies today with a temperature near 61 degrees for your high. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 43 degrees. Keeping the sunny skies around through Friday with a few passing clouds, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, high near 61. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 35 degrees. On Saturday, sunny skies with a high near 54. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 42 in Pensacola, 41 in Gulf Breeze, and it's 38 in Milton. Our next news at 8 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Active listings in November were just over 12% higher than they were in November of 2023 and hit the highest level since 2020, according to Redfin. More than half of those homes, however, sat on the market for at least 60 days. The latest monthly price report for S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller showed prices nationally up 3.6% in October compared with the same month a year ago. 55% of holiday shoppers felt stressed at the costs associated with the holiday season this year. That's according to a survey by the Harris Poll. 10% of holiday shoppers this year were considering tapping their emergency savings for gifts. And that's according to NerdWallet. Aeromexico, Saudia, and Delta dominated the rankings for most on-time airlines last year. On-time arrivals are flights that arrive within 15 minutes of their scheduled time. No airline topped 90% in on-time arrivals. Futures are moderately higher. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials lost 29. That's Your Money Now.
Hi, my name is Michael Dylan Thompson, candidate for Congress here in my home district. I'm proud to be the only candidate who voters petitioned to be on the ballot. Every other candidate paid over $10,000 to qualify, often using either lobbyist or special interest money. As a born and raised Pensacola native, I will fight for my district. I will fix the insurance crisis created by establishment politicians, and I will protect our brave service members who keep America free. We don't need outsiders bringing Washington, D.C. corruption into Northwest Florida. We need new ideas and fresh leadership to fight for us. As your congressman, I pledge to always put Florida first. There's a critical election on January 28th, and I need your vote. This is our chance to take back our voice and send a clear message to the career politicians. We won't let special interests decide our future. Together, we can restore accountability, protect our values, and secure a stronger future for Northwest Florida. I'm Michael Dylan Thompson, and I'm proud to approve this message.
Paid for by Michael Dylan Thompson for Congress, Republican.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to the Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to the Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
So we have been aware of the Baller situation for a long time, and we did indeed harden those target areas where the Ballers are. We have patrol cars out there as a hard target, as well as with barriers.
Bollards were not up because they are near completion, with the expectation of being completed, of course, by Super Bowl, way before Super Bowl. But that is the reason.
Now, I want to share with y'all, if you did not know, that this particular terrorist drove around onto the sidewalk and got around the hard target, where he did have a car there, we had barriers there, we had officers there, and they still got around. Now, the wedges that you see out there as well, we knew that that had malfunction problems. And I want you to understand, let's say we put the wedge up and it got stuck. There is no way that ambulance could get in or out. People couldn't get in and out. So we knew that these were malfunction.
A lot of very discouraging information that came out of this press conference at 1 o'clock yesterday. That was the voice of Mayor, New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell and Ann Kirkpatrick, the superintendent of New Orleans Police. About especially their physical barriers. The wedges didn't work. The bollards weren't up. Nothing was functioning properly. And so they were trusting in some cop cars and, hope, I think, was their plan. And he drove up around on a sidewalk and obviously did all the horrible things that he did. Joining us now, we have Pensacola Police Chief Eric Randall. Chief, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, thank you, Andrew. Thank you for having me this morning.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you making some time for us this morning. So obviously what we're all thinking, and I talked about this yesterday with, your public information officer, Mike Wood, of course, we have a lot of events in Pensacola. We have Mardi Gras coming up. We have, all kinds of things where people in crowds, art festivals and tastings and whatever the case may be, and whether it's in front of Seville Square or in front of Seville Quarter or at Seville Square or Bartram Park or Wahoos or at the main parade route on Palafox, people are asking the question, am I safe? What would you tell them?
Well, good morning, Andrew. And first of all, I want to, extend my condolences to all those affected in the tragic incident in New Orleans. Our sister city. Many folks from Northwest Florida travel back and forth to New Orleans all throughout the year. So, it's almost a direct impact here in the Pensacola area. But as far as what we do for parade routes and events and things of that nature, we have a very robust security apparatus that we deploy, especially on the parade routes. A lot of it is visible with multiple layers. A lot of it is not visible to the public, but in the background of other things that we do. And every event, we're always evaluating it as a single event, looking for brainstorming for any gaps, any things that we potentially could need. And also, the other part of it, too, is working with our event organizers, our community leaders, and things of that nature to make sure that we got all our things covered. And the other important part is, our community plays an important role with information. If you see something, you know something, you got to say something. Prevention is where we want to be ahead of the game. So,
no, I completely agree. One of the things that, I know you guys do is you will park not just police cruisers, which are pretty light, but you'll actually park dump trucks and large mechanisms that constitute a physical barrier across major intersections. And you have cops in cars with lights on and on station watching to make sure something doesn't happen. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, Andrew. So we're deploying heavy vehicles for that very thing. So they're there to stop anything that could potentially come into the parade route or any route of that nature. And that's one of the visible physical barriers that you see as one level. Like I said, there are multiple levels to what we're doing. And each and every event, you know, I and my team evaluates it, and we look at each one, you know, after action and look, what more can we do to step this up? What more can we do to enhance it? We're utilizing technology. I mean, as technology becomes more and more available, we're utilizing technology as a force multiplier, as, you know, that eye in the sky, on the ground aspect of it as well. So it's a multi-pronged approach, using everything that we got. And as new things come available, we'll be looking to employ those as well. And I would tell you also, me and my team, we monitor everything that goes on around this country. Anything that happens nationally, you know, affects us locally. So we're in close coordination with our different organizations, you know, looking at after actions, looking at recommendations. And most of these chiefs in these major cities are just a phone call away from the connections that we have throughout the relationships we built over time, coordinating with Atlanta PD, Chief Kirkpatrick over in New Orleans. You know, those people are just a phone call away. Chiefs in South Florida, chiefs in Tallahassee. I mean, we have a national reach, and coordinating with our federal partners, because they play a major role in this as well.
Have you talked with Superintendent Kirkpatrick since this happened?
No, sir. I have not talked to her since this happened. As you could aware, I'll be aware that they are very busy in New Orleans. I've been in close coordination and contact with our federal partners, seeking information that could be beneficial for here in Northwest Florida, making sure that channel of communication is constantly flowing. After learning of this incident yesterday early, I've been on the phone regularly over the last, 24 hours, making sure that, we got everything squared away here in Northwest Florida, making sure that we are coordinating and communicating from a public safety standpoint.
Great. I want to continue this in just a second. We're talking to Chief Eric Randall, Pensacola Police Chief Eric Randall. John Pickens got traffic on the fives. John?
No accidents to let you know about right now. It looks like I-10 and I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. We're talking again to Chief Eric Randall. And Chief, I fully understand the need for operational security, investigational security, and I don't want you to say something on the radio that's going to do anything to make anybody unsafe. But I do have some questions about our physical measures here in Pensacola, because I was horrified watching this press conference yesterday and hearing them say that for 10 years they've had these devices that they can't trust and don't work, and that they're in the process of installing these other devices that don't work yet, and that their solution was to park, police cars across these intersections and then get surprised when somebody decided to drive around the police car and go on the sidewalk, which seemed to me like the most predictable thing in the entire universe. I kind of hate to make the comparison, but Germany decided to go through, Belgium again, it's just the most obvious workaround. So my question for you is, first of all, do our bollards work to stop something like this, including will they stop somebody trying to get on the sidewalk?
So we have bollards. Our bollards go across the street in certain areas along different routes. We do different things when it comes to sidewalks. We have different protective multiple layer measures that we deploy to have in place. So there are things from an operational standpoint that, obviously that I won't go into that
sure.
are out there to aid us in protecting the community. We made significant investments, the city has, over the last year or so, into barricades and things of that nature that we are deploying and have been deploying on our major events. So those are other physical and visible things that the community sees that when we're out there. And then, like I said, as always, our information intelligence gathering has to be ongoing. And a key factor in that is our citizens and our community being actively engaged in what's going on and sharing that information with law enforcement. No matter how big or how small it is, those pieces to the puzzle add up.
One question I have is, I know a lot of attention gets paid to Palafox for obvious reasons. It's gallery night, it's a pedestrian zone all the time, but we have events at other places in town that are not, I don't think, don't quite have that same level of attention. Now, as I recall, Belmont DeVillers had some bollards put in years ago. I don't know what the status of those is. But it seems to me like there are a lot of places where maybe the physical street infrastructure is not there. Does this event make you focus more on what can and should be done for those types of events as well, including the, you know, big trucks and big obvious intersections? Seems like a good start to me, but there's a lot of places where cars have access, you know what I mean?
Right. Oh yeah, Andrew. You know, it, you know, that was one of the things that's always on my mind, you know, the event safety, the events that we have here in Pensacola. So we're always looking at those and looking, brainstorming on what more should we and what more can we be doing, and, you know, what investments can we make moving forward on those events. We have a lot of events. We have, you know, like you said, a number of different locations, especially as, you know, winter goes away and spring moves in. Right. We have those major events that come in there, those festivals. So, I mean, that is always on the back of my mind, thinking about how do we protect these events and how do we be more and more innovative. And I think that's a good thing, because that means that from a law enforcement public safety standpoint, we're always thinking about that. We're not becoming complacent. We're working to be innovative, brainstorming, and working to be proactive when it comes to that, because that's in the forefront for us.
The wedges, the, you know, lift barricades that apparently did not work properly in Louisiana, that's why they didn't have them activated. I've experienced those myself, like being at the Republican and the Democratic National Conventions. The Secret Service obviously uses those. They make everything go very slow, but they do work. Is that a useful technology for us, especially around Palafox? Is that a technology that you guys have looked at?
I haven't specifically looked at that. There are other technologies out there that are more mobile that could be deployed. We've seen some demonstrations from a lot of different companies that that have these devices, anti-truck. They're actually pretty unique, because they will start by actual big box trucks, but they're deployable. So those are different technologies, you know, from, I mean, they're used around the world, but, you know, those are investments that we have to look at from a regional standpoint to be looking at. So the other things that we've done is utilize what we got, and, you know, the big trucks, the barricades, the investment we made in barricades. So these investments are being made in different stages as we continue to build upon a robust security apparatus for these events.
So those portable, deployable anti-truck devices sound to me very appealing, because they're not then specific location dependent. I don't even know what kind of a price tag we're talking about to have something like that. But is that something you need? Is that something you need to ask for? Have you talked with the mayor about funding for that kind of a thing?
We've been in the early stages of actually looking at that. And I tell you, one of the things that comes up is when we go to these different conferences and things of that nature, talking to vendors and things of that nature, this is something in the early exploration. And the event in New Orleans just kind of brings those things back to the forefront to have some conversations internally.
Okay.
to talk about, you know, the next steps moving forward. But there is a financial piece to those particular things that I was just talking about, those anti-truck devices and things that are portable. There is a significant financial piece to that. But we're in the early stages. Conversations on those have not been had, but we're always making those investments in other barricades and things of that nature. But like I said, we're always looking how we can enhance what we're doing, and that's the important part of public safety here in the Pensacola and Escambia County, not being complacent, looking at what more can we do, always being hungry for more. That makes us safe to not be complacent when it comes to these particular protecting these events.
The last question I'm going to ask you about this particular subject, Chief, we're talking to Chief Eric Randall from Pensacola Police Department, is I guess I'm super sensitive right now to the sidewalk threat. And it's my recollection that we don't have physical barriers on the sidewalks around Palafox and that vicinity, Main Street, Garden, that kind of thing. And we're in the process of doing the reimagining Palafox, like that we're gonna be rebricking, repaving, doing all kinds of stuff. Can I assume that installing, if we don't already have things in that, that's a part of that design process, that you're going to be emphatic about making sure that's in place?
Yeah, I'll make sure part of the conversation that we can take a look at that. Off the top of my head, I knew it was roadway and some curb redesign and things of that nature, but we'll have to have a conversation internally to talk about that and how that would affect the project or not. So
yeah, it just seems like, you know, I think on all of our minds right now is just the sidewalk is, you know, the weak point, and let's make sure that's not a weak point for very long. Last thing, Chief, and just a quick thing, we're completely out of time, but I did want to give you a chance to, the red light cameras are flashing, are working, are operable. They're not issuing actual tickets yet. It's just warnings, but they were supposed to go live yesterday. They are in action right now?
Yes, sir. They are in action. If you ride around the intersections, you'll see the signs are now uncovered, photo enforced area. We're in our 30-day warning period as the system, you know, has come live yesterday. This is what starting day two. So, yes, they are live.
Do you happen to know if we've issued any warnings yet? Because I know it was all supposed to go through a process where they, you know, it automatically gets sent to a police officer reviews, and then decides to send forth the, you know, what would eventually in a month be a ticket, but right now is a warning. Do you know if any have been issued yet?
We just started yesterday.
I know. but I know how many people run red lights in Pensacola, too.
So the information will be flowing through us, and
okay,
then we'll have that information.
Fair enough. I got you. I know.
Yeah.
And obviously you've been pretty involved
I knew
in
that
other conversations.
Coming,
I'm sorry, what was that?
I knew that question was coming.
Chief Eric Randall, as always, Chief, Happy New Year, by the way. Thank you so much for the time. And really, I appreciate you answering a lot of my kind of sort of rude questions. But, you know, I definitely appreciate the expertise. And I really appreciate your emphasis on technology. That's been a theme of your administration from the beginning, even before when you were hired. That was part of your kind of your pitch is technology. So thank you so much for that. Chief Eric Randall, we'll talk to you again soon, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a blessed day.
You too. 7:55 here on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Still no accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing very smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, if you're 64, turning 65, or retiring, or you're already on Medicare, but you need to make some changes or at least understand, call Ricky Stewart. She is a dear friend. I've known her as long as we've lived here, back when she was with the news and then when she was doing other things. And, you know, she's great mom, great friend, just a wonderful person. Her whole family does insurance, and this is the one part that she does. If you're going to transition onto Medicare, it's I mean, you have questions. So ask, you know, what supplement? What's Advantage? What about prescription drugs? What about Medicaid? Does that even apply to me? What is it? What's the difference? Great questions that you've never had to know answers to before until now. So call her. She'll take care of you. 341-2185. I know she's talked to so many other listeners just like you. Just like me, if I were 64 or turned 65, I'd be calling her for this exact reason. Ricky Stewart Insurance, you can look her up, or 341-2185.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College, on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 a.m. Key Marine Center is sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. It's a dream team, so join them tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, and the News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Lego my ego, please.
He said there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow unchased. I got bills to pay.
7:58 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable, what?
That Lego my ego, I remember the next part. It was like, Dad, I've shattered my image of you, or something like that. I wanted to keep going with it.
I know. There's a lot of those good classic in what you remember. The image is burned in your brain. Because, you know, advertising doesn't work, right? Except for 40 years, you've got this burn in your brain. Let's get traffic. We did traffic already. Sorry. Yep. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Yeah, some of the people that were thought to be planning explosives in the French Quarter have been ruled out now as suspects in the attack yesterday. That's according to a report from NBC, which is citing senior law enforcement officials. The FBI does say weapons and IEDs were found. At least 10 people recovering after a shooting in New York last night. Those shots rang out outside of a nightclub and event venue in Queens. 10 people were shot. There's new study that shows just a small amount of intense exercise can lower a person's risk for a major adverse cardiovascular event. Researchers at the University of Sydney say just 1.5 to 4 minutes of high-intensity exercise throughout a day can lower that risk.
Yeah. So what?
Still not going to do it.
No. I prefer the one that says, have a drink or two a day and you'll be better off. That's a little bit more in my acceptability wheelhouse. Also already doing. So no, that's very good. All right, David, thanks so much for the update.